Welcome to episode 325 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. But not before calling out what a sport you are, Josh. Like, you are seriously dedicated to this show. You are recording this show on your birthday.
Yeah, but I don't make that big of a deal out of my birthday.
Oh, but it's your birthday.
Much to Jen's chagrin. Like, Jen is all about birthdays. With Jen, it's like a birth week. And with me, I'm like, I don't need presents. You don't need to get cake. Let's just have a normal day. It's not a big deal. And she gets mad at me. We need to celebrate you.
Yeah, as long as you remember that she likes that and behave accordingly on her birthday,
exactly.
Then you're okay.
Right. All right. So let's dig into this. We had mentioned last week that our voicemail may be messed up. It is. So if you want to send us voice recordings, you're going to have to do it by recording an MP3 of yourself and emailing it to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com while we look for a new solution for voice messages. You can also just send regular emails to that address, which is what Freddie did. Freddie says, "Hello, Josh and Richard. Thanks for the great info on MCE Reset Toolbox. My HTPC is beautiful again. Great software. Everyone should check it out. Now, if only someone knows the best commercial skipping software for a Windows 8 machine." I'll answer that really quick. ComSkip. Just use ComSkip. It's pretty much your only option right now.
And that'll work on Windows 8?
Yep. Sure does. He says, "I'm a longtime listener and Windows Media Center user. I wanted to give my 2 cents worth about how good Windows Media Center is with Windows 8.1. I only use 2 remotes, a Logitech remote, and a Sodeco RF wireless mini keyboard and mouse in one. I love this device. If you run Media Center, you know you need a keyboard and mouse device, at least for maintenance."
So true.
"You know, updates, software maintenance, etc. With Windows 8.1, MCE, and these remotes, you can easily flip from the Metro screen where you can pin all your beautiful live tile apps like Netflix, Hulu, ABC, Fox, CBS, ESPN, Vudu. By the way, Microsoft's video app is good now. It used to suck, but I use it now over Vudu since it will show up on the best phone ever. You know what I mean, Josh. You have one too. And my Nokia tablet." I think he means the Lumia 1520, by the way. "I get the best of both worlds with Windows Media Center and using media apps on Metro. It's not painful at all. You just need a good second wireless remote like I use. It works so good that it has the wife approval. We all know how important that is. No figuring out what input source to use since you don't need a Roku, Apple TV, DVD, or Blu-ray player, Xbox One, cable, Cox, etc. It's all in one. Less stress, less mess, less dust, less fuss. Still a great platform." You think Freddie works in marketing?
I don't know. Very, very well put, though. And I agree that I think that combination of things would be fantastic. I just don't want to have to use a mouse-like device when I'm using my television.
Yeah, that's a really polarizing topic. I don't think I could convince Jen to use, a pointing device of some sort, whether that be a little trackpad or some sort of air mouse or something like that, regularly. I have one. Like you said, you need it for maintenance, and sometimes things go wrong, and sometimes you need a keyboard and mouse. And so I've got one, and it's stuffed underneath the coffee table, and Jen does use it occasionally, but only when she has to. She certainly doesn't ever want to, but hey, if it works for Freddie and his wife, then that's great. But that's definitely a controversial topic, and I think more people than not tend to think that they would rather not have to use a trackpad or mouse in the living room.
This is great feedback, though. And I know that a lot of people who have home theater PCs who aren't necessarily using Windows Media Center or who need to branch beyond Windows Media Center for streaming apps, do use a keyboard, do use other applications, and the fact that the apps that are already built into Windows as tiled Metro modern Windows Store apps are pretty much ready-made for a 10-foot experience except for the D-pad control is a great thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that he kind of goes out of his way to point out that, guys, there's a lot of apps available here. Now, we talk about the Windows platform not having apps, but man, if you want your media apps, it's got most of them.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, our next message is from Brian, and this is also largely good news. Brian says, thanks for your suggestion on episode 324. Yes, Josh guessed it right. I have an old Panasonic plasma that's only 1080i capable. And yes, I'm overdue for an upgrade. I envision a 75-inch 4K set under my tree this year. As to Richard's question, yes, my desktop PC resolution was also set to 1080i, so it matched Media Center's resolution. I tried Josh's tip to downgrade both the desktop and Media Center to 720, then switch back to 1080i. I don't know if that did it or fiddling with some of the other settings over the weekend, but it seems to be sticking with 1080i finally. Yay!
Yay.
That's the end of the good news. Now, I'm seeing Media Center crash when prompting me to accept a new guide terms of service. I can't click accept since the program crashed. Grr. Thanks as always for the fantastic podcast and your help, Brian. So I have not seen this problem, but I'm wondering if, you know, I never know what could be causing problems in Media Center. One of the things that I typically do if I'm seeing a Media Center crash, and I know this is crazy because we just got him to set his resolution correctly, is I take it out of full screen mode and I run it in a window and then I do whatever it is that I'm trying to do in Media Center and see if it behaves better that way. Sometimes it does, because sometimes it's the weird graphic thing that it does to make it full screen.
You know what else could fix it? A 75-inch 4K TV.
Or it might not, and then he'd be even more angry. Well, but he'd have a beautiful picture in front of him.
Well, exactly. It's worth a try, right? Push that past the budget committee. Yeah, running it in a window, I like that idea. That's certainly, when it comes to especially installing other things like the digital cable advisor tool and things like that, I always run Media Center in a window because you never know if there's something popping up behind the Media Center window that's causing the problem. Again, as usual, I would say check your Windows Event Viewer for any potential error messages there. This seems odd. Another thing that you could check, though, is Windows Updates, especially if you don't have them set to auto update. It could be potentially a missing Windows update that's causing the problem. That sounds somewhat unlikely, but it's worth a try anyway. Just, you know, run updates if you haven't done them recently. You know, I suggested this for a problem last time, but it could potentially be an issue here. Check your system clock. Guide date is obviously dependent on your time, and I know a lot of the Windows Media Center update stuff is dependent on your time being at least close to correct, which Windows doesn't do a good job of doing. So check your Windows system time, the event viewer, and your Windows updates, and hopefully one of those will fix it if just running it in a window doesn't. All right, that's it for our email this week. Thank you to Brian and to Freddie for sending those in. If you'd like to send an email for a future show, you can do that by emailing us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
And in particular, I really want to thank both of them for follow-up. It's so great to hear when things have or haven't worked that we suggested, so we can find out how to potentially answer questions for future people who write in.
Right. Well, and you know how when you were in school and the teacher would say, raise your hand if you have a question, and then no one would raise their hand. And then the teacher would eventually say, you probably have a question and you might be too afraid to ask, but if you have a question, someone else probably also has the question. It's same here. If you've written in because you have a problem, there's a decent chance that another listener has had or will have the same problem. So if you can provide the answer. You're going to help more people too. So yeah, huge thanks to Brian and Freddie for the follow-up for sure. All right. Well, I'm glad that we were able to get through the feedback kind of quickly because we got some big news this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've been talking for, I don't know, 5 years, 6, 7 years about, you know, what are we going to do if and when Media Center goes away? And as Windows 10 approaches, we get more and more nervous about Windows 10 going away. And even if it doesn't, more and more people are getting frustrated by the lack of updates. So what's the next solution for us? Well, Silicon Dust may have a solution for us. Yesterday, they launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund a new product of theirs called HD Home Run DVR. Silicon Dust, of course, the company behind the HD Home Run TV tuners that we've been using since 2007. That's how long they've been putting out tuners. And now, I mean, they've had some apps along the way, but now they're really digging into the software. They're working on their own full-on DVR software package. So recording live TV for you to watch on other devices. How does this all work? Well, it's a little bit different than Windows Media Center. So you are going to need some sort of computing device to run this service on. It can either be a regular home theater PC, either Windows or Mac, which is kind of cool. Or if you don't want to run a full-on PC all the time, it's also going to run natively on some network-attached storage devices, including a couple of popular ones like the Western Digital MyCloud series and the QNAP NAS devices. And they're hoping to talk with even more NAS vendors to bring in support for that. So you buy a Silicon Dust networked base TV tuner and then either have an HTPC or one of these NAS devices running the service. Setup is supposed to be super simple. My guess is all they really need is your zip code so they can pull in the correct guide data and it starts recording. You can use any mix of their tuners that they have. It supports the Kinect, the Extend, and the Prime, the Kinect and Extend being over the air, the Prime being the cable card version. You can have both types if you want. You can have multiple recording locations. Maybe you've got an HTPC and a NAS. You can set it all up to work together. And then for playback, they've got apps on Windows and OS X also, in addition to Android. And then they've got stretch goals. You got to remember it's Kickstarter. They've got stretch goals that if they reach them, they're planning to release apps for Kodi and iOS. This is where I want to take the first break because the playback options seem a little odd here to me, Richard. It seems like, of course, Windows is a big deal because if you're a Media Center fan, you've already got a Windows Media Center PC probably hooked up directly to your TV, and you can just run this app on that home theater PC.
Right.
But what if you don't? You know, what if you've got the NAS solution already, but in your living room, you've just got a Roku or an Apple TV or a Chromecast or an Amazon Fire TV? They don't support any of those.
That's an interesting point. But one of the things that they do talk about in here is that their goal is to provide access to the copy protected content, including that content which is marked as copy once. And the challenge there is that many devices are simply incapable of supporting that. They don't have the necessary hardware and firmware to make that possible. So I think that they've tried to select the collection of devices that they think are going to give them the best compatibility for protected content without, you may notice, explicitly stating which platforms may still be a problem, even though they do say that not all platforms will be able to support the protected content.
Yeah, that's the best theory I've heard as to why they haven't announced more support for more devices. The other thing that seemed odd is, all right, I understand that Android is incredibly popular and does have more market share than iOS, especially throughout the rest of the world. But iOS is a stretch goal? That seems like it should be right near the top of the list. Aren't you going to want to watch this on your iPad?
Again, I have to wonder if it's about whether or not the platform is going to be able to support the content. I also think that the team that's building this, well, the company that's building this for sure, I don't know about the team, but the company that's building this already has experience building applications for the Android platform. They already have a viewer app. And this is really kind of extending what is going to be possible on the platforms. And so why not start with the platform where they've already built an application and they can really just extend its capabilities? I think that has more to do with it than what's more popular or anything else like that.
Do they not already have an app for iOS?
I don't believe that they ever released a viewer app for iOS that works the same way as their app for Android. I could be mistaken, but I do remember that they did Android first, and that was out for a very long time.
Okay, yeah, I don't really know because I don't have any iOS devices, and I don't have a recent HD Home Run device either. So, I guess I just assumed, perhaps incorrectly, that they were already supporting iOS. So that would also make sense. For those wondering what they're doing for copy protection in the new HD Home Run DVR app, they're doing the same thing that they're already doing in their viewer apps, and that's using DTCP/IP. Sounds like a bunch of crazy letters together, but that is a Cable Labs blessed and approved DRM scheme. So they shouldn't have to go through separate Cable Labs certification that, you know, we were used to seeing these companies run into years and years and years ago when all of the cable card tuners started coming to market. A lot of those certification rules have changed. So it looks like, you know, we're not going to have some big long delay waiting on approval and things like that. So you're just going to get access to this and fairly soon. If you pledge more $60 or more to the Kickstarter campaign, you could have access to the HD Home Run DVR app as early as August. If you pledge 30 or more, you can have access in September. And then it sounds like what they're saying is in October, general release. And then the other interesting thing here is, you know, we're used to seeing Windows Media Center. It's basically free. It's $10 extra if you're using Windows 8.1. We've seen solutions from like Media Portal and Sage TV in the distant past that had one-time upfront fees. Silicon Dust going slightly differently. This is going to be a subscription of $30 a year. Richard, I know you're not a fan of subscription fees. What do you think about this one?
I have no problem with that price at all. If Microsoft told me, if we're going to keep Media Center alive, we need you to subscribe to the data that makes it possible, I would pay $30. No problem.
Well, especially if you were reasonably certain that you're not just paying for the guide data, you're also helping to support continuous improvements of the app, which is what I would absolutely expect from this HD Home Run crew.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I want to look at here is the campaign itself. So they're asking for what I think is a measly $100,000. In the scheme of things, for a company with a staff to create a team to build a multi-platform app like this is going to cost way more than $100,000. I think what they're doing here is they're trying to get a feel for the appetite for this product. Is there going to be enough demand for it? Is it worth us building? Interestingly enough, probably barely 48 hours into this campaign, they have it 2/5 funded already.
Yep, they're already at $40,000. They've got almost 550 backers to the campaign. That's not too bad.
No, I mean, I think this is a definite funded project. The question is then, how much do they get and what do they end up doing with this? You know, I saw this and I debated about how I wanted to pledge to this. I will definitely pledge. I just haven't decided what exactly I want to do yet. They have a bunch of different options. Some of them are really just, you know, help us out, we'll give you news. Help us out, we'll give you early releases. They also have things like help us out, we'll give you a subscription and a multi-terabyte NAS, which is a cool concept, except I have Drobos, so I don't know that I really need that.
Well, Richard, I know what's perfect for you. You record a lot of TV.
I do.
And you never, ever like to delete any of it.
I do. And for a mere pledge of $1,599, I could get a 24 terabyte NAS.
Plus a cable card and ATSC tuner. That's a deal, man. There you go.
Absolutely. Except that I already have the cable card and ATSC tuners, so I really don't need those.
But think of the cause, Richard. Think of the cause. You could be the only one. The only one. There's only one.
Yeah. I'm going to pass on that one.
Okay. We'll leave it for one of the other listeners.
Yeah. I think this is cool. I think, you know, I'm curious what the Windows experience is going to be like. Like, what I don't get a good feel for from this is, what does this look like on my TV? What does this look like on my home theater PC? And they show it on a TV and it, you know, it looks nice, but how does it work? And is it in fact going to be that family acceptable experience that Media Center has given us? That's the thing that we really need to crack here, right? For someone to be successful in this space, they need to create a user experience that is just seamless for everybody in the family that wants to use it. And they have a huge, huge opportunity here, but I think it's daunting. I mean, I think this is no easy task, and I hope that they succeed at this, because I think this is very important for this space. You know, when we spoke with Ted Head, the CEO of Silicon Dust, at CES 3 years ago, he talked with us about this Project Connect that they were working on and this concept that they're thinking of how they could extend DLNA in a way that would actually allow them to create clients that would be much more versatile, much more useful than just the crap DLNA clients that we're used to. This is that. This is the fruition of that plus more. And I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, me too. You know, from a user experience point of view, it does need to be good. But I don't even think it necessarily needs to be as good as Media Center. It needs to be better than your cable box, but that's not a very high bar to set. So, you know, I think as long as it's somewhere in between there at launch, it'll be good enough. Now, I do want it to be better. I want it to be as good or better than the experience that we get from Windows Media Center. But I think at least initially, maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be. But I do definitely hope that they're using some of this money to get a good user experience designer / engineer in there to really polish that experience. Not just the design. We're not just talking pretty graphics here. We're talking about the full usability lifecycle. So we got one question here from Rennie in the chat. He wants to know, because I think he's used to being burned by things like this, because he's Australian. Is this only available in the US? It's not, and Rennie's in luck. It's available in the US, Canada, the UK, and Australia once it comes out later this year, with plans to support more of Europe over time.
I want to put just a word of caution on top of all of this. We all get very excited about dates. We know the history that tech companies like this have with meeting their dates. And we know the history that Kickstarter campaigns have with meeting their dates. So I'm not too bent on this fall delivery timeframe. I would not be getting too upset if we see this not happening until the end of the year or early next year. I think that's not inevitable, but a distinct possibility. So we'll revisit this in the fall. We'll see how things are going. Certainly, even as we see updates coming out and new news and information, we'll want to be covering it.
You know, and that's a good place to wrap this up. It did cause me to go back and reread their wording for this that led me to think that it might be an October release. Here's the what the $30 pledge says. You get access to this. It says 1 month before public signup, and the estimated delivery for this is September. So I thought, all right, September plus 1 month, October. But that doesn't say 1 month before general availability. It says 1 month before public signup. That just means that people are going to be able to sign up for it in October. But we sign up for things all the time prior to them actually coming out.
So, watch.
Right. So, that's a good word of caution to toss out there. But it's obviously something that we'll be keeping a really close eye on as the year progresses. And we wish Silicon Dust and the HD Home Run guys all the best with this. We hope for a great product.
Absolutely. All right. Well, while we're talking about video and streaming video to your devices in particular, one of my favorite products, PlayOn, has new updates that are available now, today. They're here. You can get them. HBO Now, Max Go, Showtime Anytime, now on PlayOn. They just showed up. No big announcement. They mentioned when HBO Now came out that you could get HBO Now if you had HBO Now service. Now, you already have to have it, so it's not like you can sign up for it through this, but if you have the exclusive HBO Now service through Apple, then this will work with that. This will give you the ability to watch or even record, if you have Play Later, the content on HBO Now or Max Go or Showtime Anytime. Love this. They've had HBO Go for a while. They have all of the networks. Every time we talk about this, I say I don't understand how this is legal. They say it is. That's good enough for me. I'm sure their lawyers will protect me.
More great news from the PlayOn guys. One of the most underrated companies in this space.
Yeah, they're doing really cool stuff.
All right, so that's it for our video news this week. We don't always have audio news, but we've got a little bit this week. There's a new app out for the Xbox One. This is specific to Xbox One because when I say the name of it, you're going to say, wait, we've had that for years. No, we've had that for years on the Xbox 360. And what app am I talking about? iHeartRadio.
Do you heart radio?
No, not really. But I never listen to the actual radio. And I've never really been an iHeartRadio user either, although apparently I created an account at some point, because when I went to try this out today, it asked me to sign in, and the credentials that I guessed at worked. So I've apparently tried it at least once. I tried it out a little bit today. It's a pretty decent app. Sounds good. Gives you, it's like Pandora, sort of. You pick radio stations based on types of music that you like. Now, I know Pandora, you would pick like an artist or a song, and this is a little bit more general. You pick types of music you want to listen to, and it's not even just music. You can listen to, like I put in news and talk, and it gave me, there were a couple of local talk news stations that showed up in the list. So that's there too. The only thing that I found weird about it is I went to stop it by saying Xbox stop, and it didn't work. It brought up the typical Xbox select sort of interface, which I could then say stop, but I couldn't just say Xbox stop like you can with, regular Xbox music or watching TV or anything like that. Hopefully they're going to patch this, because that seems a little silly to make me say Xbox select and then stop or play or whatever. But other than that, I like the app. If you're into iHeartRadio, there's definitely no reason not to get this app on your Xbox One.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Does not iHeartRadio also pair with radio stations so that if you explicitly wanted to listen to, like KITS from the West Coast, that you could potentially just do that directly?
I think so, because I saw some local radio stations show up in there. I didn't actually listen to any of them, but I assume that if I would have selected them, it would have just been the live stream from that radio station.
Yeah, that's really what I think is the differentiating factor here. I mean, there are third-party apps that do this, and sometimes there are native apps that make this possible, like iTunes itself has radio station access. But I think the vast majority of stations that I here now actually actively promote that we are a partner of iHeartRadio. Listen to us here or on iHeartRadio.
Hmm. All right. Cool. All right. So let's move on to some gaming news. You know, you put in most of these stories. Why don't you get us started?
Well, I don't know about most, but certainly the first one. So we've talked about Games with Gold a couple of times, and I made the very conscious effort this month to make sure that I downloaded the games that were available. But one of the things that I noticed at the start of the month was that on the Xbox 360, only half of the games they were offering were going to be available at the beginning of the month, and the other half were available at the end of the month. So it's the end of the month. From the 16th through the 30th of April, the two games Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag and Army of Two Devils Cartel have become available and can be freely downloaded on the Xbox 360. So that's good until the end of the month. And if you're interested in those, go ahead and download them. Now, I learned something. You know what I learned? I learned that if I try to download something on my game console and I don't have the room for it, as I mentioned last week that I don't, that it doesn't buy it anyway.
Really?
Really.
Oh.
So if you're in my boat and you're waiting for that 2 terabyte drive capability that isn't coming until later this year to be able to put these things on your device, then make sure that you go to the Xbox.com site and buy it from the store where it's available there, because otherwise it will not let you buy it if you don't have room on your 360, which is stupid.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't think that limitation was there.
Yeah.
Huh. And just to fill you in along with the rest of our listeners who may or may not know, this whole like splitting it up between the month for the Xbox 360 releases for Games with Gold, that's how it's worked for a long, long time. They basically almost always offer twice as many games in Games with Gold on the 360 as compared to the Xbox One. And this is how they do it. So for the first half of the month, you get a game or two. And then for the second half of the month, you get a different set of games that you can download. Whereas on Xbox One, there's not as many games available. So they just make them available for the whole month.
All right. This is going to be like live radio. Ready? I'm going to break in with breaking news. We just got a tweet from Dan Skaggs' wife telling us that, yes, indeed, Dan listens to a local station for UK sports on iHeartRadio. So it does do that.
All right. Thanks for the update. All right. So a couple more gaming stories here. This is a slightly unusual one. This happens every once in a while, but this weekend, if you're an Xbox Live Gold member, you're going to be able to play NBA 2K15 for free the whole weekend. Download it, play it as much as you want, play it online against friends if you want. It's just free. And at the end of the weekend, it just won't work anymore. So it's basically a free demo weekend of NBA 2K15. I have no idea if this is a good game. I'm not a basketball guy, so I don't know. But if you're into basketball at all, then you might as well go and download this unless you're, I don't know, trying to think of a reason not to do this. Maybe you're near the end of your bandwidth cap. I don't know. If you like basketball, try it out because it's totally free. So there's no reason not to.
Cool. Now, you have been working on a series of reviews for headsets for the Xbox One, and your most recent one just went live.
That's true. So last year, we saw a whole bunch of headsets all release at about the same time. I got all of them, tried them all, and the one that I liked the most a year ago was the 4Shot from Polk Audio. Absolutely loved it. Great sound, best sound quality of all of the ones available. It was comfortable. It had some weird issues with the mic that they eventually fixed with a different accessory and all that stuff. But in the end, it sounded good through the mic also. But it was a pricier headset. You know, when it came out, it was like $160, which is a lot more than some people are willing to spend on a headset for their Xbox One. That was one of the issues. that Polk Audio wanted to address with their next headset, which came out somewhat recently, and that is called the Striker ZX. The ZX version is the one specific to the Xbox One. They also make a PlayStation version of it. I believe the only difference between the ZX for the Xbox One and the PlayStation version is how it connects, but I don't know for sure because I'm not a PlayStation guy. So if you've got an Xbox One, you would be looking at the ZX version of the Polk Audio Striker. And it's a nice looking headset. You know, the first thing that you're going to notice about it is it looks different. It looks a lot different than a lot of the other headsets. It comes in a few different colors. There's basically a black and gray one if you're trying not to stand out from the crowd too much. There's a white one with blue accents if you're you want to stand out a little bit. And then there's the really wild one, and it's white with a really bright orange color. I think it looks really great, but I'm sure a lot of people would be turned off by how bright those accent colors are. The other thing about how it looks, and maybe about how it feels, that's somewhat surprising and very different from the Foreshot is this one's all plastic and it is really light. And I don't know about you, but when I think of light and plastic, I think it's got to be weak and brittle and it's probably not going to be very tough and it's not going to last long.
That's exactly what I was thinking right now.
But that's not the case with the Striker ZX at all. That was probably one of the biggest things that shocked me with the Striker ZX from the very first time I grabbed it. Like we saw this at CES, and the person who was helping me with it said, "Well, yeah, it's plastic, but watch." And she just grabbed it by the ends, like near the ear cups, and starts twisting it and stuff. And it was totally fine. It's this weird kind of thick but somewhat flexible plastic material that's actually stands up pretty well to abuse, and at the same time is light, which is great. You need that lightness to be comfortable. One of the problems that I had with the Striker ZX though is that I didn't find it all that comfortable. You know, if you're playing with a headset, you're probably playing for long gaming sessions, and by long I mean you could be sitting down for 2, 3, 4 hours, you know, sometimes longer, depending on what you're doing. And for me, now granted, I've got a really big head, a really big head. I don't know what my hat size is, but it's big. And the Striker ZX, after about an hour, didn't feel all that great, especially, you know, a little bit of pressure around the ears. Honestly, I think the problem is more that the ear cups themselves don't have a lot of depth the way that the Foreshot does, and frankly a lot of the other headset manufacturers. You know, I think they were trying to make this a slimmer profile so that you don't necessarily look like you're an air traffic controller, and they succeeded in that front, but it might have been at the cost of comfort. In terms of audio quality, this is a lower priced headset than the Foreshot, so it doesn't sound as good. I mean, the Foreshot just sounds phenomenal, no matter what you're listening to. The Striker ZX, it's not a headset that you're going to want to listen to all of your music on and watch movies through and stuff like that. Is it good enough as a headset, though? Absolutely. You know, I don't need it to be absolute audiophile grade audio quality for playing a simple game. But the one thing, audio related thing that I noticed was, you know, when I played with the Foreshot, it's not technically a surround headset, but it seemed like the sound was coming from more of the direction of where it should be in the game. You know, I use Call of Duty when I want to test that out, because, you know, you're in a big firefight. There's people all over the place shooting at you, and you need to know where those bullets are coming from or where those footsteps are coming from. And with the Striker, you can definitely tell if they're coming from the left or the right. That's pretty easy. But I wasn't able at all to tell if they're coming from in front of me or behind me while playing Call of Duty, which is pretty important. And it seemed like I could tell better with the four shot. Now, was it the same as having, you know, a 5.1 setup of speakers in my house? No, neither of these headsets gave me, you know, that level of perception, but the four shot seemed better at that. So does the Striker ZX beat the four shot? No, but I don't think it was really meant to, except in a couple of really key areas, being price, which it definitely wins in. The Striker ZX is $90 on Amazon, which is considerably less than what the four shot initially launched at. And the other thing is the microphone. The microphone is way more convenient than dealing with the four shot. The four shot, they tried giving you a detachable microphone and a little pop out microphone out of the ear cup, which was miserable. So then they replaced it with a separate cable that had a boom mic attached to it. And that worked really well, but it's kind of a mess having to deal with swapping cables around. So with the Striker, it is a small boom mic that actually extends out of the left ear cup and then tucks back into it when you're not using it, or if you're not playing with other people at all and definitely don't need the microphone, then you don't even need to pull it out. And it looks nice. It works, you know, it functionally. The way that it's stored and all of that works really well. The problem is the microphone itself doesn't work all that well.
Oh.
It's just, I think the problem is that the extension just isn't long enough. It doesn't actually get close enough to your mouth. And we've got one of the press images in our review to give you an idea of just how short that microphone extension is. It does not get very close to your mouth. And when I was playing with other friends, they said they had to have their chat volume all the way up to be able to hear me at a reasonable volume. And that was with me talking a little bit louder than usual. So, which leads me to the other feature that is really great about this, that unfortunately is mired by the fact that the mic is too quiet. And that's that it has the ability, and in fact, you can't even turn this off if you wanted to. It does microphone monitoring. So you hear yourself while you're talking, which is incredibly important in a gaming headset, because if you can't hear yourself, you talk really loud. So, which the other people in your household might not want you to do.
But maybe you should.
But that's the unfortunate problem. This microphone is so short. You have to talk loud just for the people that you're playing with to be able to hear you. So,
you know, it's funny, now that you're saying this, I'm remembering that you've had this headset on a couple times when we've had calls, and I've said, "What are you using? I can barely hear you." So I get it now. I didn't realize that was this item that you were reviewing.
Indeed it was. So that, you know, those are the big strikes against it. It's got some things going for it. It's got some things going against it. Frankly, I would still recommend spending a little bit of extra money and going out and getting the four shot. If you don't want to spend more money, there's a comparable option from Turtle Beach. But you know, I would recommend just go and get a four shot. You can get it on Amazon for far less than what it debuted at. And in fact, holy cow, you can now get it for $100 on Amazon. So for $10 more, I had no idea it dropped down that much in price. For $10 more, I would get the four shot. It's a better headset by a huge, in almost every capacity. The last takeaway from all of this though, is that Polk is clearly learning from what they're producing. They had some issues with the microphone stuff and dealing with the microphone on the four shot. They fixed some of those problems with the Striker, but not all of them. I really actually like the plastic materials on the Striker. I'm sure they're cheaper than the components they used on the four shot, and they still hold up well. You know, so I think that while the Striker is not an absolute home run, Polk is continuing to move in the right direction with their gaming headsets, which, you know, they're new to this thing. You know, Turtle Beach has been doing this for like a decade or more, and Polk just got into this a couple years ago. So I like where they're going. I'm looking forward to seeing what they have, what they produce next.
Very cool. And I can't say that it's a terrible review for something when you say, you know what, you should probably buy the one that's $10 more.
Yeah, I thought it was like $30 or $40 more. I can't believe the four shot has dropped down to $90 or $100. I mean, that's just crazy.
That's great.
It is. All right, so let's move on to some mobile news. We've got a new release of the Windows 10 technical preview for phone. This is build number 10052. It just came out, I think, today, as of us recording this. If you're super excited about tons of new features, don't be, because there aren't any new features. It's basically just bug fixes. And some of them are important, but it's just bug fixes at this point. The other thing that's kind of new with this is, while we had that huge list of devices that the Windows 10 technical preview was supposed to work on, shortly after they made it available, they removed the Lumia 520 from the list because they were having issues with it being able to restore back to Windows Phone 8.1 if you didn't like it or just, you know, had issues.
And that was the one that I had called out saying, it even supports, because that's one of the devices that I have.
Right. And it's the device that I have that I was planning to test it on also. Well, with this new build, they've re-released it for the 520. So if you were waiting on being able to run Windows 10 on a Lumia 520, now you can. And, you know, we always like to have new features in these preview builds, but frankly, from what I've been hearing, a preview that's all bug fixes might be exactly what they needed, because every single person that I've talked to or seen tweeting about Windows 10 for phones has said, yeah, this is really not stable. I'm going back to 8.1 on my main phone. Now, granted, Microsoft says you probably don't want to install this on your daily driver, and that's why. But, you know, we got so used to like the developer preview, which a lot of people got in their minds was, you know, this is us living on the cutting edge and getting, you know, brand new software that, you know, maybe it's not done. Well, it was done. Those preview versions of Windows Phone 8.1 that we all got used to last year, those were finalized versions of Windows Phone that we just got access earlier than what we would have gotten access to them while waiting from our carriers to give them to us. Windows 10, not even close to being done, apparently. And we're learning the hard way. You know, anybody who's installing this on their daily driver is learning the hard way. And that's why I haven't put it on my primary phone, because it's my primary phone and I do need it to work at least reasonably well. And it doesn't sound like it is.
And you shouldn't be. I mean, this is intended for people who want to find out what's going on in the upcoming release, for people who are testing applications that they currently have to make sure that they still work. This is not intended to be your primary operating system. They're clear about it. We should be clear about it. But I know it's so tempting. You want it. You only have one device. What are you going to do?
So that leads me into kind of a bigger question. And that is, if Microsoft is planning to release Windows 10 this summer, now I understand. I understand what summer means. Summer means sometime between what, June 22nd and September 21st, I think are the dates.
And that's, I think, a huge, we have a range, pretty good idea of when that's going to be. I mean, there's been a leak from AMD basically that this is going to be July, which, right, is frightening.
It is horribly frightening. Windows 8 was so much further along at this point of the release cycle than Windows 10 appears to be on any device. I don't just mean phones. I mean on tablets and PCs also. Windows 10 is a mess right now, and I don't see how they could possibly get it to a reasonably good state by July. July is going to be here in no time, and it's not like they're cranking out new releases of this every other week with tons of new enhancements and bug fixes. They're not. It's like once a month at this point, if we're lucky. I'm not feeling good about this, Richard.
So I'm curious what you think about the most recent tablet update, where we were wondering, are there going to be changes to the tablet experience? Because they had so dramatically changed the tablet experience that it seemed to really degrade it. I haven't had a chance to test that because it's still not installable on machines that you can't install a compressed operating system on. And I'm only saying that because that's what the message says. I don't even know what that means. But what I do know is that I can't test this, and that's frustrating. You've tried it. You have the updates. Is it any better yet? I mean, is there hope, or is this still going to be kind of a mess?
It's not really that much better yet. I think what you're talking about is build 10056, I think it is. It's 50-something is the last couple of digits. And that's the one where some people have been blogging that this makes the touch experience better. Well, that build still isn't actually out yet. Those are people running a leaked build. And I'm just not willing to go to the effort of installing leaked builds of Windows 10. I've read through the articles. I've looked at the screenshots. I've read the descriptions of the changes. They don't sound all that drastic to me. You know, I was listening to the Digital Lifestyle podcast this weekend, and they mentioned this build, and Jason on the podcast was like, I can hear Josh Pollard now getting excited about the tablet fixes. I'm sorry, Jason, you can't, because I read these articles and I'm not any more excited. It still doesn't look like it improves things very much.
Also, this is a little bit inside baseball, but isn't that the most bizarre experience to listen to a call out while you're listening to something?
Yes, it is a little unusual, but fun. Well, and it's weird to be on the other side of that too, because then, you know, when you're a podcaster and you call out somebody else, right, you're expecting a response, but you have no idea when they're going to listen to it. So they just got a random tweet from me Saturday afternoon. You know, that's a couple of days after they released the show. So yeah, a little unusual for sure. But that's the state of Windows 10. I'm really worried at this point. We can only wait and see what the next builds bring us, though, I guess.
Wow. Yeah. It's coming close. All right. Well, in the meantime, Microsoft has been really, really busy building Apple Watch apps. What?
Seriously?
Seriously. Now, Apple Watch is going to be a race. What's out first, this podcast or Apple Watch? For most people, it'll be this podcast, including me, sadly. So the, I know, I'm in the June delivery window. I'm really not happy about that. But the fact is that everybody's trying to get on the bandwagon. Everybody's trying to get their app on this watch. And you know that the first like 100 apps or so that we try are going to be terrible. We know it. Let's hope that Microsoft has done something better. Now, there's one that doesn't fit into our overall genre stuff that we talk about, but I think is ideal. And it's a controller for PowerPoint. So smart. I love it. Makes complete sense.
That is smart.
You know what doesn't make sense? My OneDrive photos on my wrist. Why would I want that? I don't understand.
Can you make them like the watch background?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I do know that even Apple has an app that lets you look at your photos. Do you remember early internet days when we watch video that we kind of flippantly called postage stamp video because it was so small. That's what this is going to be like.
That
literally
is what that's be like.
The size of a postage stamp. Not joking. Literally the size of a postage stamp. Why would you want that? I don't get it. I really don't get it. But you can now look at your photos from your OneDrive on your Apple Watch. Go to it.
All
let
right.
us know. If you have one, let us know what you think. Because I won't know until June.
But that'll be the first thing you try.
Probably not. All right. Well, that's it for our Microsoft news. So let's jump into some industry news. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about, this is kind of interesting. You know, we always talk about how we really prefer software as a way of getting content onto our devices, or at least maybe third-party devices instead of smart TVs that have stuff built into them. Well, here's a really good example of why that matters. This week, YouTube is deprecating, and by deprecating, I mean turning off a lot of its old APIs that allowed people to access YouTube content through apps made on televisions and devices prior to, you know, a long, long time ago, 2012. 2012. So that means that that 3-year-old TV that you have that came with a YouTube app that maybe when you bought it didn't have the ability to update it through firmware. Yeah, that's dead. That's not going to work anymore. And
crazy.
This is not going to be unique to televisions. There are going to be Blu-ray players. There are going to be lots of other devices that are also going to have this problem. So just want to let you know, some of your YouTube apps on some devices may not work. You know, I bet that's going to include maybe some old Windows phone devices, 7-something.
Could be.
I don't know.
I have a solution. Do what Brian's doing and get a 75-inch 4K TV this fall.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I think he actually expects Santa to bring it to him, though. He said it was going to be under his tree. So,
all right. But it's obviously the solution to most of our problems.
Well, I think having Santa bring a big TV is the solution, frankly. I mean, I think that's the best idea.
Yeah, not going out and paying for one yourself. All right. Well, so we've got just one more quick little thing before we get into what's going on in our entertainment centers. This week, a coworker and I decided to put Tidal, that new music service from Jay-Z, through its paces. He signed up for a trial of Tidal and wanted to see how the hi-fi sound compared to Spotify Premium. And I'm a Spotify subscriber, so we got our matching MacBook Pros and his nice headphones and a headphone amplifier, and played songs back to back on the two different devices. One had Tidal going, one had Spotify going, and wanted to see if we could tell a difference in the audio quality. And I could tell you that on every song we listened to, you could tell a difference. Depending on the song, you could tell more of a difference, but every single song, you could tell a difference. And in every single case, the Tidal Hi-Fi version did sound better. It did sound more clear. It sounded more accurate. It was absolutely better. But neither of us thought that it was worth paying twice the price. To get Tidal Hi-Fi access, you're looking at a $20 a month subscription. And we both love our music. We want it to sound good. But $20 a month, just it's not that much better. Not to me and not to my coworker.
You know, it's funny you say that. I think that there's been so much attention on these high fidelity audio services, and I'm not knocking them. I know that people do like the high fidelity audio. I, for one, am too old to be able to hear the difference. And it's not just because I'm used to crap audio from my Napster days. It's because I think, you know, as you age, you can hear fewer and fewer of the frequencies. So to me, something like this is just a complete waste of money. What I find so funny is that people like Neil Young, how old is he? Is one of the people who's promoting high fidelity audio, as are many other artists that have been around for a very long time. I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm glad that it's out there. I don't think it's worth twice the cost. Everything about Tidal, except for the fact that they purportedly offer a better deal for musicians, in my opinion, is just not worth it.
Agreed. All right, so you can't hear good quality audio with your old ears, but you got anything else going on of interest that does work for you in your entertainment center?
Well, I do. You know, I mentioned that I have this Xbox 360 that I've been downloading games that I'll never play onto.
Speaking of old.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things that I remembered was that, oh, that's right. You're going to be able to hook up a hard drive to it. I'll go down and I'll find a hard drive. So I found an old, unused, small form factor, 500 gig hard drive, threw it in a enclosure, attached it, and then realized, oh, right, I'm not in the preview program.
Whoops.
So I can't do that until later. But I have a hard drive there. It's all ready to go.
At least you're prepared.
Exactly. Now, I have been watching a fair amount of stuff, not the usual things. Well, some of the usual stuff, you know, keeping up with Arrow and keeping up with The Flash. And what did I say I had to catch up on last time? Oh, yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm really, really enjoying that this season.
Someone has to.
So I watched Interstellar this weekend. We watched it. We sat down and watched it. That's a long movie. It's almost 3 hours long.
It is.
Have you seen it?
I have. I saw it in the theaters.
It did not seem 3 hours long.
No, it doesn't. That's exactly what I was just going to say. It is a long movie, but it doesn't feel too long.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't know what to expect going into this. And man, the trailers for this are so deceptive because they make it seem like these, you know, these farmers are going to try and figure out a way off this rock. And that's like the primary storyline of this whole movie.
Which is not the case at all.
Might be 20 minutes of it.
Right.
And then they're in space.
Right.
And
the farmer used to be an astronaut.
Right. So I really, really liked this film. I did not know what to expect. When you figure out what's going on, it was, I never saw it coming. Never saw it coming. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I still don't understand how it all wraps up. And I still agree, completely agree with Brian Brushwood's assessment of science, 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 magic.
Right.
Because that's kind of how it goes. But it was still awesome. Loved it. Would highly recommend it. So
I never saw the dinosaurs coming. I mean, who would have expected that?
Yeah, seriously. That was just completely out of left field.
I'm just kidding, Sola Swede. We don't spoil things on this show.
Wait, no dinosaurs. That was on the Jurassic World trailer. Holy crap, that's awesome.
That does look really... Like, I'm not really into the Jurassic Park movies, but the Jurassic World trailer was awesome. I do want to go see that movie now.
Yeah, that looks amazing. And of course, that came out the same week as the Star Wars trailer. Well, a couple days later from the Star Wars trailer, which is friggin' amazing for those of us that grew up on Star Wars. It pushed all the right buttons.
Yeah, that one looks really good too. Of course. I mean, it's Star Wars. We're going to go see it either way. But yeah, that trailer looked really good too.
I was an opening night person for I think every single Star Wars film. So wow. Yeah. So this is going to be hard for me because I'm likely not to go out and see it on Christmas Day.
Oh, is that when it comes out?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure that's when it comes out.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. The second Star Wars trailer is way better than the first one. The second Star Wars trailer, it's awesome. Disney, you rock. All right.
GP3 is saying in the chat that Star Wars comes out December 18th.
Okay, good, good. A week before. That's good. Whew. Man, I was concerned because, I mean, how am I going to say, hey, you know, I would love to spend Christmas with you guys, but sorry, kids, I have to go see Star Wars now. Bye. All right.
Right.
I realized I hadn't watched any House of Cards in a while, so I decided to watch an episode of that just last night, in fact. Watched episode 3, the beer pong episode. That was pretty cool.
It was all right.
I liked that. All right. You know what else is on Netflix? Daredevil. There's any more good? Marvel for you to be watching, Mr. Pollard.
No.
Yes.
No, don't have time.
And there are tie-ins.
All right, of course there are. You can't suck me into this one, Marvel. It's not going to happen.
First couple of that, it is fantastic. So I liked Agent Carter. I love this. This is so well done. This is so good. I'm very excited about it. I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
Cool.
I wasn't watching a whole lot on Hulu this week because for some reason, any device that I tried to use to access Hulu was telling me that I was getting an error trying to access Hulu. Was something going on? Did I miss it?
I have no idea. I'm not a Hulu user, and apparently don't follow the Hulu people on Twitter either, because I never saw anything about issues with Hulu.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but I would try it on my TiVo, and then I'd try it on my Apple TV, and then I even fired up the Xbox and tried it there. Errors everywhere. Couple nights, so not sure what was going on there. All right. Wow, that's pretty much it for viewing. I want to talk about one thing. You know, last week I mentioned that I put together a list of the things that I listened to, and I thought it might make sense for you and I to kind of take turns each week talking about a podcast that we enjoy, that's part of our listening or viewing regimen. So I wanted to start that off. And one of the things that I listen to each week now is a fairly new show called iChart Radio. And most people know that I am, equal opportunity Windows and Mac in this house. Well, probably more heavily on the Mac side. But I have a lot of Apple stuff. And one of my favorite Apple reporters, Ken Ray, started a new show called iChart Radio that he does with a co-host from Canada, Mike LaPlante. The two of them have an amazing rapport, very funny. They talk about basically a wrap-up of the week's news. It's a Saturday show that talks about the last week's goings-on. It's an hour long, audio only. I highly recommend it if you are into the Apple ecosystem at all and interested in finding out what's going on in that space.
And unlike most Apple things, this I is not just the letter, it's EYE.
Oh, good point. We'll have a link in the show notes, but it is EYE chart, as in I chart, like you went to the eye doctor, like I did actually last Saturday. You know, this is really funny. I didn't even realize this. I tweeted last Saturday as I was driving into the city with a picture of my dashboard showing the iChart Radio logo that I was listening to my favorite weekend podcast as I was driving into the city for my eye exam. That never even dawned on me.
Crazy.
Serendipity. All right, Josh, what's going on in your entertainment center?
All right, not a lot of anything new. I thought we might watch Iron Man 3 this weekend. We didn't get to that. We were doing other things, and then I got Jen into the newsroom last week, and when we sat down Sunday night to maybe watch Iron Man, she said, nope, we didn't get to watch the newsroom last night. We're watching the newsroom tonight. And so I think I watched half of season one over again.
Wow.
With her, because it's so good. And to be fair, half of season one is 5 episodes. It's not like watching a 22 episode season,
right,
of something on regular TV. But yeah, so newsroom again. Jen is hooked. She needs season 2 now. So You know, I was thinking of holding off, maybe doing the HBO Now thing. And I think I'm probably going to be buying the Blu-rays rather soon.
So, yeah, you better do that soon, because if not, based on this and your West Wing viewing, you are going to be going through some Sorkin withdrawal.
Yeah, well, and I'm curious if she's going to pick up the West Wing now. Of course, it's terrible timing for me, because I'm almost done with the entire series. I'm a third of the way into the final season, season 7 of the West Wing. And then, so maybe in the next week or two, I'll be finishing up the West Wing. I wouldn't say for good. I wouldn't be surprised if someday I go back to it, even though it's 7 seasons. But as for what's next, I mentioned last week that maybe it would be The Americans, and I think it probably should be. But then one of our listeners emailed us and pointed out that Halt and Catch Fire is on Netflix now, which looks really good. And I also, on a different podcast, heard about a show called Turn, Washington Spies. It's another AMC show, season 1, available on Netflix. Both of those sound really good. So I've got a lot of things to watch now, apparently.
Yeah, I'm excited about Halt and Catch Fire, because I had recorded a couple of episodes of that and I didn't get the beginning of it beyond the first. So thanks to Steve, who pointed that out to us. That's something I definitely want to catch up on. I don't know where that's going to fit in the overall scheme of things, but it's on my list now.
Sola Swede points out Orphan Black is back.
Right, yes. I forgot about that. And oh man, that first episode, have you watched it yet, Josh?
I have not.
It is awesome.
See, my problem is now that I watch so much stuff on like Netflix and stuff that I've gotten used to binge watching, and I'm not sure if I want to watch it. Like, I'd rather watch a few episodes together. So I might wait a couple weeks.
I couldn't wait. I watched it the night it recorded. I could not wait. It absolutely satisfied. I'm very, very excited about this season.
And while I was watching something else this weekend, I saw a tweet from you that said, whatever you're watching now, if it's not Orphan Black, turn it off and watch Orphan Black. So apparently I need to watch that. So maybe I'll at least watch episode 1 sometime before we record next week.
Cool.
That's it for TV shows. I'm the gamer on the show, though, so I did a quick update on what I've been playing. I decided to check out Neverwinter. It's a free-to-play MMORPG on the Xbox One. I think it's been on PC for over a year now. I've never really been an MMO guy, but I figured, hey, it's free. Why not give it a try? It seems okay, but since I've never played an MMO before, I don't have anything to compare it to, so maybe our listeners are playing. Maybe they can tell me that it's a complete waste of my time and that I should stop immediately, and if you tell me that, I will. If you say it's not and you'd like to play with me, then cool. Let's try that too, because I'm still really new to this whole MMO thing. And I'm not just going to dump it on my own right away, because I've got a few more weeks until Project Cars comes out. So might as well keep trying this, I guess, I suppose. All right, but that's it for what's going on in my entertainment center.
Well, cool. All right, well, one quick announcement before we wrap up. I was on the most recent episode of the Smart Home Show. That's Mike Wolf's IoT or Smart Home podcast. And we took a look at what Amazon's doing in the smart home space. They've kind of come out from nowhere, and they're obviously making moves. So we spent about a half an hour talking about that. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. Great show. All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. You can tweet at us. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're also on Google Plus, and there's the Windows Media Center community over there also. If you'd like to talk to other Media Center users, you can email us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And we've got some other podcasts for you to check out. The End User, which, hey, came back last week after a couple weeks off. They're back covering the latest tech news from the end user perspective. And there's a new episode of your show, Home On, covering home automation and control news. This is going to sound like you're repeating yourself. What's going on with Home On?
You remember that I just mentioned Mike Wolff? This was one of those quid pro quo, hey, I pronounced it right, things again where we decided, well, if we're recording one episode, we might as well record two. So he was on my show, and then I was on his show. And on Home On, we went through a pretty lengthy lineup of the latest news. And there was a lot to go through, including some of my favorites, lots of lighting news. So check that out if you're interested. That is episode 46. It is out now. And not now, like I usually say on the show, oh yeah, it's out now, and it doesn't really come out until the next Monday. It's out now. And in our next episode, we're talking with an integrator who's made a business out of doing IoT integration for people who are typical DIYers with consumer products, not high-end installation kind of things, but helping just the average person install stuff in their home. Interesting conversation. That'll be coming out in a couple weeks.
All right. Well, you can find Home On, The End User, and Entertainment 2.0 on iTunes, the Zune Marketplace, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. And we'd really love it and greatly appreciate it if you could leave us a rating or a review. It helps us out a lot, and we thank you if you've done that or if you're considering doing that. And then if you want to talk to us, but tweeting just isn't real time enough for you, come back and listen to the show live. We record this show typically on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes the schedule changes a little bit, so follow us on Twitter to know for sure when the show is going to be live. But you can come join the chat room, hear us as we're recording the show, correct us when we say things like incorrect release dates for Star Wars, and give us your own feedback for what you're doing in your entertainment center. So that's going to do it for episode 325. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next week for episode 326. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.